WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Johannes Werner with your daily headlines for Sunday, October 13th, day 4 after Hurricane Milton. The damage Hurricane Milton brought is in the billions. It is safe to say that insurance will be the top issue for the Florida legislature in the upcoming session. Outgoing Senate President Kathleen Passidomo already said last week, before Milton, she expects reconstruction to be a major issue. The regular session is scheduled for March, but there may be a special session before that. Private insurance companies are now less likely to come back, and the state-run insurer of last resort, Citizens Property Insurance Corporation, could face a shortfall. With 1.3 million policies in force as of last month, three times as many as 5 years ago, Citizens is the by far largest provider in the state and is now facing billions in claims. To stay solvent, if the current structure remains in place, the outcome will ultimately be higher premiums for property owners who are already strained. Sheldon Whitehouse, the Rhode Island senator who chairs the budget committee, has already said the federal government may end up to be on the hook for a bailout. He told CNN he believes Citizens is one catastrophic storm or storm season away from insolvency. Meanwhile, in Sarasota and Manatee counties, linesmen are restoring power at a quick pace, and private work crews, most of them immigrants, are clearing debris. Water service has resumed in Casey Key with a boil water notice. On Siesta Key, utility workers are still trying to restore water service. Fuel has become a major bottleneck, with long lines at the few gas stations that have gasoline and diesel. Sarasota County opened a fuel station in Northport at Suncoast Technical College, 4445 Courier Lane. It's open today from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Limit is 10 gallons per vehicle. To apply for FEMA disaster assistance, go to disasterassistance.gov. You can also use the FEMA app, or you can call 800-621-3362. Help for businesses is available at businessrecovery@scgov.com by calling 311 or 941-861-5000. This has been Johannes Werner with your daily headlines for Sunday, October 13th.
Programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2024-2025 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information available at ringlingcollege.gallery.
You're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton, who at the music and arts venue Fogartyville provide a center for creative expression and community engagement that amplifies the voices of our diverse community and promotes peace, sustainability, democracy, and economic and social justice. I am Lou Larinian. Thanks for tuning in to Surreal News, where we offer opinions, comments, and perspective on the events of the week, which do not necessarily represent the station, its board, or anyone else other than the person who expressed them. Regular listeners to this station already know that our membership drive, scheduled to run October 9 through the 15th, has been postponed and will be held from November 13th through the 19th. That means that this Surreal News is not live as promised last week, but has been recorded earlier in the week to be sure it would be completed before any loss of power. Speaking of the impending storm, I sincerely hope everyone survived this historic event safely with minimal loss of property. If you're hearing this, then I suppose it will be proof the station is intact. I must note that after more than 30 years of enduring Florida hurricane seasons, this is the first time I have seen a storm start in the Gulf to the west of the Florida coast and then move east. I wonder if this historic event has anything to do with the historically warm water temperatures this summer. Just thinking. Stay tuned until half past the hour to hear co-host Steve Norris speak with investigative reporter, author, and filmmaker Greg Palast, who will update us on his latest movie that exposes election malfeasance in Georgia. But first, hear how disasters occurring during presidential election are nothing new and can have consequences. Another presidential election blown around by a hurricane. In terms of politics, Vice President Kamala Harris and President Joe Biden are hoping that recovery from Hurricane Helene will resemble the federal government's response to Hurricane Sandy in 2012, a fairly smooth process that did credit to the last Democratic-led White House in a presidential election season. Former President Donald Trump, meanwhile, is trying to turn the latest natural disaster to strike the U.S. during an election year into a Harris-Biden version of Hurricane Andrew in 1992, a slow, sloppy response that sealed the political fate of defeated President George H.W. Bush. There's nobody that's handled a hurricane or storm worse than what they're doing right now, Trump said to supporters last week in Saginaw, Michigan. Trump's indictment has included falsehoods. He claimed that federal disaster money went to migrants and that Georgia Governor Brian Kemp, a Republican, had trouble reaching Biden, but neither were the case. And the 2024 Republican nominee for the White House has been accused of playing politics with disaster relief during his presidency. During his tour of ravaged areas of Georgia, Florida, North Carolina, and South Carolina, Biden urged people to put politics aside and try to help as many storm victims as possible. The election's hurricane debate is particularly fierce in Georgia and North Carolina, storm-damaged swing states that were the recipients of candidate visits last week. Disaster politics is a staple of presidential politics, from the flu epidemics of 1918 to 1920 to the start of the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. After all, fall campaigns take place in the heart of flu season, although any disaster and the government response to it can change the shape of American politics. During the Great Mississippi River flood of 1927, President Calvin Coolidge appointed a prominent official to head up relief efforts, Commerce Secretary Herbert Hoover. Already famous for getting food supplies to Belgium during World War I, Hoover rode flood relief all the way to the White House. Presidents, as chief executives and the only leaders selected by the entire country, are expected to take action that will protect and help Americans, said political scientist Laura Brown, author of Jockeying for the American Presidency, The Political Opportunism of Aspirants. When disasters occur, she said, Americans look to presidents to see how closely their promises of compassion, protection, and assistance match their deeds. The cautionary tale is President George H.W. Bush. Seeking re-election in 1992, Bush already faced trouble from a slumping economy and a fierce challenge from Democrat Bill Clinton. Then came August and Hurricane Andrew, which smashed the southern coast of Florida. In his biography, the elder Bush historian Timothy Naftali wrote that it took too many days for the U.S. government to respond adequately. Bush wound up losing the election, although the incumbent Republican did carry Florida barely. His son, Republican George W. Bush, took care to look on top of things when four hurricanes hit Florida in a six-week period during the 2004 hurricane season, another presidential election year. The next year, after winning a second term, Bush suffered for a sloppy response to Hurricane Katrina, an example of what not to do. Incumbent President Barack Obama fared better in October 2012 when Superstorm Sandy gutted the New Jersey coast. Obama promoted cooperation with New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, a prominent Republican, and the Democratic president sailed to victory over GOP nominee Mitt Romney. When Christie ran for president in 2016, Republicans criticized him for working with Obama. Trump, then a primary opponent of Christie, mocked the New Jersey governor, saying he was like a little boy. Oh, I'm with the president. Mike Duhamel, a former aide to Christie, said voters in his home state of New Jersey loved Christie for working with Obama and overwhelmingly reelected him governor in 2014. As Trump tries to criticize Harris and Biden over Hurricane Helene, some of his own former officials say that he played politics with disaster relief while he was in the Oval Office. Trump hesitated to provide disaster aid to areas he believed were Democratic-leaning, including California's wildfires raged. In a report from Politico's E&E News that cited interviews with a pair of ex-Trump aides, Trump campaign spokesman Stephen Chung called the story fake news and that it never happened and none of this is true and it's nothing more than a fabricated story from someone's demented imagination, Chang told USA Today. Presidential candidates are not the only politicians whose actions during a national emergency will be considered by voters. House Speaker Mike Johnson refused to call lawmakers back from recess early to vote on emergency hurricane relief, and instead is spreading Donald Trump's lies about recovery efforts, a columnist wrote this week. Louisiana Republican will visit Western North Carolina this week to survey damage from Hurricane Helene, but the new Republic's Ellie Quinlan Hogue-Tailing questioned his commitment to helping to clean up after the natural disaster. While executive branch figureheads float around the American South in the wake of Hurricane Helene promising relief, one Washington Politico's actions could actually make all the difference for thousands of victims, but he doesn't seem to want to be doing anything about it, she wrote. At least 231 people have been reported dead in six states hit by the Category 4 storm, which is one of the deadliest in U.S. history. Another 300,000 remain without power Sunday evening in Georgia and the Carolinas. So far, President Joe Biden has deployed 1,500 troops to help with recovery efforts alongside more than 6,100 National Guardsmen and 7,000 federal personnel, she wrote. She added that the Biden-Harris administration claims to have distributed $131 million in federal assistance. Johnson, on the other hand, appeared on Fox News Sunday to elevate Trump's false claim that the Biden administration has diverted emergency relief funds from Federal Emergency Management Agency to resettling illegal aliens who have come across the border. That prompted FEMA Administrator Deanne Criswell to push back, calling the Trump-Johnson claim frankly ridiculous and just plain false. This is the kind of rhetoric that is not helpful to people, Criswell said on Sunday. It's really a shame that we're putting politics ahead of helping people. Heads up to renters who lost property during Helene and who may have damage from Milton. You can make a claim to FEMA. Hurricane Helene's storm surge left destruction in its wake for many renters and homeowners, but there is relief that people may not know is available to them. Renters, along with homeowners, can file claims with the Federal Emergency Management Agency at times of disaster. Professor Christine Cerniglia, disaster law expert at Stetson College of Law, said renters may be missing out on relief money. Many times renters don't think they have a right, but if they have occupied a property that's been destroyed by disasters, they should file a FEMA claim within 60 days, Cerniglia said. And she says there are a lot of items renters can claim. They can claim any food that was destroyed in the refrigerator. They can claim if they've lost uniforms and they need to replace those uniforms in order to get back to work. They can claim possibly temporary housing if they need expenses for temporary housing, Cerniglia said. J. Michael Shea is the executive director of St. Michael's Legal Center for Women and Children. He has this advice as many start to apply for insurance claims and disaster relief money. Document everything. Take pictures of everything. Take pictures of your damaged clothing, tools, anything as it goes out the door so that you can show later on what's going on, Shea advised. If you're a homeowner or a renter who's had uninsured damage or losses caused by Hurricane Helene, you may be eligible for FEMA disaster assistance. You can apply at disasterresistance.gov. You're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV 100.1 FM in Bradenton. The state's trying to stop supporters of Amendment 4 from advertising the real consequences of the six-week abortion ban. The Department of Health has fired off a cease and desist letter to WCJB-TV and other stations for airing pro-Amendment 4 advertisements. Abortion rights advocates say the move is the state's latest abuse of power to try to defeat the upcoming ballot initiative. The advertisement in question, a woman with brain cancer, is shown in a 30-second ad describing how she found out she had a brain tumor while pregnant with her second child. The doctors knew that if I did not end my pregnancy, I would lose my baby, I would lose my life, and my daughter would lose her mom. Florida has now banned abortion, even in cases like mine. Amendment 4 is going to protect women like me. We have to vote yes, the Tampa woman said in the ad. DOH General Counsel John Wilson sent a letter last week to the Gainesville station, General Manager Alan Chapman, and Vice President of Gray TV Mike Jones, warning about the potential for of criminal charges, saying the ad contains false information. The advertisement is not only false, it is dangerous. Women faced with pregnancy complications posing a serious risk of death or substantial and irreversible physical impairment may and should seek medical treatment in Florida, Wilson wrote. However, if they are led to believe that such treatment is unavailable under Florida law, such women could foreseeably travel out of state to seek emergency medical care from unlicensed providers in Florida, or not seek emergency care at all. Wilson said DOH is authorized to institute criminal proceedings in county court and that keeping or maintaining a nuisance injurious to health is a second-degree misdemeanor. The Florida Department of Health has been notified that your company is disseminating a political advertisement claiming that current Florida law does not allow physicians to perform abortions necessary to preserve the lives and health of pregnant women, Wilson added. While your company enjoys the right to broadcast political advertisements under the First Amendment of the United States Constitution in Article 1, Section 4 of the Florida Constitution, that right does not include free rein to disseminate false advertisements, which, if believed, would likely have a detrimental effect on the lives and health of pregnant women in Florida. Politics reached out to the TV stations, DOH, and Governor Ron DeSantis' office, but did not get immediate comment. Reproductive freedom advocates have already accused the state of inappropriately getting involved and using taxpayer resources to fight the upcoming abortion initiative. The state won a court dispute, which allowed it to keep up a state agency website attacking Amendment 4. The Floridians Protecting Freedom Political Committee, which sponsored Amendment 4, sent the TV station an October 4th letter demanding for the ad to keep running. This is not simply an instance of where your station has received a baseless cease and desist letter in the context of a heated political campaign, the campaign letter said. Here, the department is threatening the station with criminal prosecution if it does not cease running the advertisement. This is not just an unfounded request, it is an unconstitutional state action. The letter is a textbook example of government coercion that violates the First Amendment. The campaign also defended the ad, saying it was accurate. Under Florida's current six-week abortion ban, women can get abortions later to save their lives if they get two doctors in writing to say so. The department may or may not honestly believe that its restrictions on reproductive health care is sufficient to protect women's health, but that is not the lived experience of pregnant patients and doctors in states with abortion bans like Florida, Amendment 4 said in the letter. Pregnant patients who have cancer generally cannot undergo chemotherapy, and because the cancer is not immediately life-threatening, an abortion is not permitted. Speaking of commercials commenting on amendments on the ballot, the Sun Sentinel recently tried to sort out the truth from the lies about Amendment 3, the effort to legalize marijuana. The fight over an amendment to legalize recreational marijuana in Florida has reached a fever pitch in recent weeks. Opponents of Amendment 3 say legalization will create a monopoly, forbid people from growing the plant at home, and endanger drivers. Supporters argue that the initiative will not create a monopoly or prevent homegrown and is instead about helping to end the criminalization of the drug, which has systemically targeted minorities. So what is truth and what is fiction? The South Florida Sun Sentinel spoke with several constitutional and marijuana law experts to clear up some of the biggest questions surrounding the ballot initiative, which needs 60% of the vote to pass. Perhaps the biggest argument made by the Vote No on 3 campaign is that the law would effectively grant a monopoly to big marijuana companies like Trulieve, a reason the company has poured millions of dollars into the ballot initiative. There are a few reasons opponents make this claim. Florida's existing medical marijuana market is already dominated by a few wealthy companies, with the millions necessary to buy a limited number of licenses. And the ballot language states that those same companies will become the first to legally sell recreational marijuana should it become law. The amendment allows medical marijuana treatment centers and other state-licensed entities to acquire, cultivate, process, manufacture, sell, and distribute such products and accessories to ballot summary states. Does that necessitate a monopoly? Not exactly. Legal experts agree that while the amendment does not itself expand the marijuana industry beyond a few existing companies, it leaves that decision up to legislators, a fairly typical approach for constitutional amendments. The legislature may provide for licensure of entities that are not medical marijuana treatment centers to acquire, cultivate, possess, process, transfer, transport, and sell and distribute marijuana products and marijuana accessories for personal use by adults, the amendment states. The decision to start with the existing companies is fairly common, according to Robert Migos, a law professor at Vanderbilt University who specializes in marijuana legalization. Legalizing recreational marijuana can create competition for existing medical marijuana companies, so sometimes a ballot initiative will give them a head start to earn their support, he said. It also speeds up the rollout. Opponents have also said the amendment bans home grow. An ad funded by Republican Party of Florida depicts a gardener hearing the news about Amendment 3 and rushing to grow his own weed when a character named Big Weed informs him that he can't, saying, "Actually, we wrote the amendment, so we're the only ones that can grow it." Trulieve is now suing the state Republican Party in two TV stations over the ad. So does Amendment 3 legalize home grow? Legal experts say no. The amendment explicitly provides for existing businesses to become the cultivators of marijuana, but says nothing about people. It doesn't legalize home grow, but it doesn't forbid it either, meaning legislators could pass a law allowing it. Bob Jarvis, professor of law at Nova Southeastern University, described the amendment's language regarding home grow as misleading, and as a result, people likely will show up at the polls thinking they're voting to grow their own pot. Only when you get into the weeds of the amendment, he said, you realize, oh yeah, that's what that is. He pointed to two sections of the amendment, one that describes marijuana companies and the other that describes what personal use entails. The section on personal use allows for possession, purchase, or use of marijuana products or marijuana accessories, but says nothing about cultivation, which the section on companies mentions. Supporters of the amendment, including Trulieve CEO Kim Rivers, say they couldn't include home grow because of the single subject rule, but legislators themselves could legalize it. Jarvis thinks the amendment could have allowed home grow without violating the rule, but doing so would invite competition. Amendment 3's opponents, including Ron DeSantis, repeatedly have warned about a ubiquitous pot smell when talking about their concerns, saying its pungent odor would reduce Floridians' quality of life. The amendment authors have allowed regulations for public smoking. Dr. Jessica Spencer, the policy director of Vote No on Number 3, wrote on X, but they didn't. The single subject rule may be in play again here, Yerrigan said. A new controversial PSA from the Florida Department of Transportation warns residents of the dangers of driving while high. Critics also point to the rising insurance rates as a result. Several studies have found a relationship between legalization and unsafe driving, but some have also found an inverse relationship or no relationship at all. A 2022 study found that 5 states that legalized recreational marijuana saw an increase in car crashes and traffic deaths. States that did not legalize the drug did not see an increase. States saw an immediate jump that leveled out to about a 2% increase following legalization and another 2% increase after retail sales began. Parents of a victim of the school shooting at Marjory Stoneham Douglas High School have produced a video game based on the tragedy that requires improved gun control legislation to win. Joaquin Oliver was among the students who flooded out of their classrooms at the sound of the fire alarm, only to meet a gunman at the end of the hall. Oliver raised his hand, a bullet traveled through it and into his temple. Oliver's murder at Marjory Stoneham Douglas High School devastated his family and kickstarted their campaign to prevent others like it. They organized protests, staged sit-ins, painted murals, sparred with lawmakers, and performed off-Broadway shows in memory of their son. Now, they've turned to a median that some blame for inspiring the government gunman who entered his life: video games. Patricia Emanuel Oliver launched The Final Exam in September, a first-person computer game that challenges players to survive a school shooting. The game shows no blood or gore. It relies instead on the sounds of gunfire, screams, and a wailing alarm as players try to escape the faceless gunman still roaming the halls. 10 minutes. That's how long the average mass shooting lasts, the game says. In this school, it's about how long you have to escape. Players must hide behind bleachers and control their breathing as the killer walks past, surrounded by objects and messages inspired by those left behind in real school shootings. Throughout the campus, they find data hidden on boards, maps, and in books about gun violence in the United States. The key to survival in the game is the same as it is in real life, the game's developers say. Comprehensive gun reform. To win, players must collect 5 legislative bill proposals hidden among the carnage. Olivia's Oliver's mother, Patricia, recited the list: an assault weapons ban, secure storage of firearms, a ban on high-capacity magazines, universal background checks, and a higher minimum age to purchase firearms. This is not a scary game, Patricia Oliver said. This is an educational game. We need to get these laws passed in real life. The game challenges the notion that violent media is to blame for real-life violence, and perhaps for good reason. According to Canadian criminologist Thomas Gabor, residents in Japan, South Korea, and the United Kingdom spend more per capita on violent video games than Americans do, but have a fraction of America's gun violence deaths. The Final Exam encourages players to instead blame gun violence on the proliferation of firearms in America. The 19-year-old Parkman gunman used an AR-15-style rifle and high-capacity magazines, both bought legally, to carry out the deadliest high school shooting in American history. It took him 6 minutes to kill 17 people and wound 17 others. Phil Chalmers, a Sarasota man who studied violent crime for nearly 40 years, believes video games are among the handful of ingredients that combine to create a teen killer. The research has yet to find a definitive causal link between the two. Chalmers said he's compiled enough anecdotal evidence to convince him. I've interviewed more juvenile killers and school shooters, and I believe, than anyone else in history, he said, and many of them have talked about a fascination with violence, violent video games, torture pornography, and torture films. 90% of young males play video games, wrote Villanova University researcher Patrick Markey in a 2015 report, finding that a young man who committed a violent crime also played a popular video game such as Call of Duty, Halo, or Grand Theft Auto is as pointless as pointing out that the criminal also wore socks. You're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. Stay tuned for co-host Steve Norris and his conversation with Greg Pallas.
This is Steve Norris reporting for WSLR and WBPV in Sarasota, Florida and Bradenton, Florida. And today we have Greg Pallas. Greg is best known for his investigative reports for The Guardian and bestsellers, including The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. Pallas has just released his film about the latest attacks on the right to vote. It's called Vigilantes Incorporated, America's New Vote Suppression Hitmen, narrated by Rosario Dawson and produced by Martin Sheen. Leonardo DiCaprio just released the film for free streaming on his site, gregpallas.com. Tell us, Greg.
Yes, gregpallas.com. You can also go to a site which is really worthwhile if you're in Florida, is another place to watch the film for free, is saveyourvote.org. Not save my vote, not save Steve's vote, not save our vote, saveyourvote.org. You can not only stream the film, if you can get information on how to protect your vote from the people we're going to tell you about, these vigilantes who are attacking voters, and you can check your registration, which is vitally important to see if there's some reason why you're off the voter rolls, you can get that corrected. So there you go. That's the advice column time. Now we'll tell you the story.
All right. Tell us, what is it and how did it start?
Okay. So the film is called Vigilantes, America's New Vote Suppression Hitmen. Well, what happened, I was doing investigations for several papers, Guardian and Al Jazeera and others, and working with George DiCaprio, Leonardo's dad, is a great documentarian, and with Leonardo's executive help. And what it's about is that in 2020, Joe Biden won Georgia, famously by 11,779 votes out of 5 million. He wouldn't be president if he didn't get that. But he almost lost Georgia, not because Trump wanted it overturned, but because a Trump front group called True the Vote, these are the people that made that really ugly racist film, 2000 Mules, out of Texas, a film launched by Trump at Mar-a-Lago. But what they also do, very few people know they do, they run a vigilante voter attack program. And what that means, in Georgia in 2020, they start out in one state, Georgia. They had 88 self-proclaimed vote fraud hunters, people who say Joe Smith shouldn't be allowed to vote. And, this is completely new. Started in 2020. And when I say it's completely new, it actually started in 1946, but then was ruled illegal by the courts. But now it's been revived, and the current court ain't saying a word, are they? So what it is I can say Steve Morris shouldn't be allowed to vote. In Florida, Trump's lawyer, Cleta Mitchell, has already challenged 10,000 voters in Florida. That's nothing compared to what they've done elsewhere. And it says, literally, I can say, don't let Steve Norris vote. And his vote will not count unless Steve goes into your county clerk's office, proves you're a citizen, and you prove your address that you are where you are supposed to be. But so individuals, vigilantes, this is not the government attacking people. This is not Catherine Harris. That's bad enough. But it is, so the self-appointed vote fraud hunters challenge your vote. So to give you an idea, if you see the film, Vigilantes Inc., again, stream it free from gregpalast.com or saveyourvote.org, saveyourvote.org. You'll see me, I get into the house of this kind of Gone with the Wind mansion. And there's a woman running for vice chair of the Georgia Republican Party. She works at Marjorie Taylor Greene. And she personally, this one woman, has challenged the rights of 32,000 people in her county, Cobb, which is a suburb of Atlanta. She personally challenged 32,000 people. And she said, you know, I couldn't even print out the list. I just sent an email with a list of names attached, which she got from the Trump group. So she didn't know who I was. For those who don't know Greg Palast, I do old-fashioned gumshoe detective undercover reporting. Get the secret documents, get inside, I'll set up false fronts. I can't do this for American papers. They don't allow you to go undercover anymore. But I work with BBC and The Guardian, and in Britain, we got to get the story any way we can get it. Except for bribery and two things we can't do, don't hack computers. But I set up a front so to get into this woman's house with a camera. I showed her a photo of a black woman. So you know this woman? Oh, no. Ever spoke to her? No. Ever been to her house? No. But she challenged her right to vote. Her vote was blocked, including 32,000 people in Cobb County. Now, luckily, I was able to go to Cobb County and give them the evidence, and they rejected the 32,000 names. So when I asked her, she said to me, I can't call 32,000 people. I can't contact 32,000 people. But you challenged their right to vote. You don't know who she didn't even read the list. And she signs an affidavit saying, I know these people. I know that these people are not legal voters. And they're screwed. They're done. Now, here's the problem. There's a new law in Georgia this year, which makes it nearly impossible for a county board to reject challenges. If you make a challenge, I'll tell you about one other voter victim in Columbus, Georgia, which is the county that has Fort Benning, Georgia. There's a vigilante who dresses up like a vigilante. He literally dresses up as Doc Holliday, and he's got guns. He's got a six-shooter on his hip with a pearl handle gun, and he made a point that it was loaded. And he pretends to be Doc Holliday, the vigilante. You might think he's a nut when you see him on the film, but he happens to be the chairman of the county Republican Party, and he's very close to Brian Kemp, the governor, and he's on the state committee of the Republican Party. So and this guy personally challenged 4,000 of his neighbors, almost all of them black bang or assigned elsewhere. For example, Major Gamaliel Turner, who you'll meet in our film, African American career officer, guns, experts on warfare of the future. He was assigned, you know, during the war in Ukraine, he was assigned to Fort Wainimi in California, and his ballot didn't arrive, Steve. So he said, so he calls up the county clerk, assigned as a soldier in California. He says, where's my absentee ballot? She says, well, Mr. Turner, you've been challenged. He says, what does that mean? He says, no problem. Just kind of come in and prove you're an American citizen, prove you are, that you live in Georgia. And he says, this is African American, of course. They're not challenging the white guys. The African American who says, so he says, all you're telling me that all I have to do 2 days before an election is fly 2,600 miles and prove as an officer of the U.S. Army that I'm an American citizen and I live in Georgia. Well, I own a home in Georgia. And he says, you talk to fools like that. He says, I'm not a fool. I know what this is. It's Jim Crow. It's Jim Crow all over again, just kicked into cyberspace. Right. You'll meet this powerful man in this film, Vigilantes Inc. That's the story of it.
Let me just remind people, we're listening to Greg Palast tell us about his new movie, Vigilante. And if I could just interrupt you for a minute, because you told us about Cleta Mitchell and these lists that they're getting. Eagle AI, how does that figure in here?
Well, believe it or not, and they pronounce it Eagle Eye, that is a return of a program of the 1960s, 1964, when Barry Goldwater ran, where basically in most states, but especially in the Southwest, this group that called itself Eagle Eye basically challenged every Hispanic voter at, you know, saying, show us your citizenship papers, and scaring away people from the polls. Show us your citizenship papers, show us your proof of address, etc. And it was an intimidation tactic in 1964, and the courts ruled it a racist violation of federal voting rights law. In fact, a violation of the 15th Amendment of the Constitution. Well, they brought it back, and now they call it Eagle AI, which they pronounce Eagle Eye again. Cleta Mitchell uses Eagle Eye to identify what she calls illegal voters. They're using an AI program, which isn't, but by the way, just so you know, and we've been through this, in my investigations in Florida, every one of these lists are completely wrong. Just so you know, because they've said, when you go to the officials, say, well, here's the list of illegal voters. Voting, registering, deliberately registering two different states, or registering if you're not eligible, is a federal crime, 5 years in the can, and in Florida you get another 5 years. If you're an illegal alien voting, and no one does, because what alien without papers is going to hand over their address and show up at the polls? They'll just get busted, right? But, so it may sound goofy that they challenged thousands, like Cleta Mitchell challenging 10,000 in Florida last time. Look, I'm sure it's way beyond that. And why don't they arrest someone? If there's really these criminals out there, why, if you rob a bank, you don't take away someone's vote. You put them in prison. So let's put these ne'er-do-wells in prison. But I don't think that there are 10,000-plus illegal voters in Florida. Now, dig this. In Georgia, they had 88 challengers in one state, Georgia. This year, through the vote, same group has signed up 40,000 volunteer vigilante vote fraud hunters to challenge their neighbors. What you do is they check you out to make sure that Greg Palast isn't getting a hold of their list. You say what county you're in, and they give you the list of people to challenge in that county, and none of these people check it out. It's quite ugly. But Florida actually has one of the smaller problems, Cleta Mitchell with the 10,000. I'm sure that there'll be more challenges before Election Day. And that's the other problem. Some of these challenges can come on Election Day. Because if you're the government, you cannot remove someone from the polls or challenge their vote within 60 days of a federal election or it's passed. The state cannot take no state can take anyone off the voter rolls as of now. But if you're a voter vigilante under Florida law, Georgia law, Arizona law, Texas law, Wisconsin law, you can say, don't let these people vote. And just so you know, the reason the film is now called Vigilantes, Inc. And the reason it's Vigilantes, Inc. is that the system of mass challenge of voters, black voters, was first tried out in 1946 by the Ku Klux Klan, which started in a plan to challenge every black voter in Georgia. They were very successful and elected a Klansman, Eugene Talmadge, as governor. So the Klan elected one of their own as governor, a Klansman. But dig this. Harry Truman sent the FBI, and they decided this is a violation of law, and they were about to arrest the governor of Georgia, the Klansman who came up with this mass challenge, except he had a collision with a bourbon and died just before he was indicted. But now it's come back, and Biden's FBI isn't challenging it. I mean, and we now have a Voting Rights Act, but the Klan incorporated itself, covered its tracks in 1946 by calling itself Vigilantes Inc. So they try to cover their tracks by saying, oh, we're this corporation that's trying to take fraud out of the voter rolls. So Vigilantes Inc. is the Ku Klux Klan plan name, which Trump has now become the Trump plan. And I'm not being partisan, Steve. People are where it goes, so I am strictly nonpartisan. But the truth is, of the 88 voter challenges in 2020 in Georgia, all 88 were white Republican officials, all of them. And so now it's 40,000. I don't know the racial breakdown, but we know the racial effect of these lists. 851,000 people have been challenged as of 6 weeks ago, so I'm sure now it's over a million.
Wow, that's quite the number. Tell us what's going on in Pennsylvania. Many people are looking towards that swing state.
Well, yes, there have been mass challenges there. There is, but luckily there's been a fight over it. In Florida, I don't see anyone challenging the challengers, challenging these vigilantes. But in Pennsylvania, yes, and they already a group challenged. I don't know how many were challenged by True the Votes list, which that's the biggest group. That's the group that's easily over a million challenges so far. And no one's really writing about this. So in Pennsylvania, we had another 10,000 challenged in Philadelphia. You know, why would they challenge voters in Philadelphia? What color might they be? It's black and sophisticated, which means their voters of color, and the color is blue. So that's what's happening in Pennsylvania. But there is some pushback, not in Florida, not in Georgia. There are lawsuits by the NAACP and others, but I don't have a lot of faith that that's going to save us. So what we do is we tell people there's ways to fight back against the vigilantes. That's why I tell people save yourvote.org, because you can also check your registration. And when you vote in Florida, vote early if you can, in person if you can. I know that there's a storm coming, or there will be a storm, or has been a storm. You know, we don't know which storm event we're in between. But try to vote early in person. Bring ID, government photo ID, also proof of address, and so you can challenge the challengers and say, I'm a legit voter. Don't let them give you one of those provisional ballots, as we call them, the placebo ballots. But that's just the beginning of the problem. I'm very worried. The other thing about the film is the great historian, Ron DeSantis appears in our film. Because you've had, the anti-CRT law, the woke legislation, which prohibits the teaching history, basically. If a white kid is uncomfortable hearing that it was white people who took Africans and enslaved them, and they're uncomfortable about it, well, that teacher's violated the law and can lose their license to teach. So if you're uncomfortable as a white kid about slavery, retell the story of the Civil War. I mean, Ron DeSantis did say that, you know, if we do teach this history, we have to teach about the good things that slavery did for black people, taught them skills, which, by the way, is a complete, total, disgusting lie. In fact, what it is, just so you know, Florida was a giant rice grower. That's when the Africans from the rice coast of Africa were brought in to plant rice. Believe it or not, the Spanish and English did not know how to plant rice. It was the Africans who taught them the technology that created the plantation system. So the people with the technological knowledge were the people that they brought from Africa. And by the way, you want to hear something ugly? A lot of those people were hired. They signed contracts. They were indentured servants. And so after a few years, they're free, and they go and they'll have their own land and their own money. What they didn't know is that once they got to Florida, once they got to the Georgia territory, they suddenly found that they were slaves for life, and their children and their grandchildren. So, but the technology came from Africa, not from Europe. And that's in the film.
What else are we going to see? So just to remind people, Greg Palast, investigative reporter for The Guardian, best-selling author, et cetera, with his new movie out, which you can get free at gregpalast.com, about voter protection. And what else are we going to see in there, Greg?
Well, interestingly, you're going to get a history lesson, too. The governor of Georgia, Brian Kemp, it was his family which first brought enslaved Africans to the South, to the Deep South. The Georgia Territory, just before the Revolutionary War, was most of the South. It included a hunk of Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi. And so basically the Deep South was one territory called the Georgia Territory. And guess what? Most people don't realize. Georgia Territory is one of the few places in the Americas where slavery was absolutely banned. It was against the law to enslave anyone or to have someone enslaved in Georgia, in the Deep South of America. And it was Kemp's, the current governor's family, who ended up, who got a special dispensation from King George III. Remember, we got rid of that guy. But before he was booted out, George III gave Kemp's family, then called the Hatchers, the right to bring in Africans in chains. And that led to the complete bankruptcy and destruction of Georgia agriculture, which then forced all these small farmers to become workers. Basically, they said the white small farmers ended up virtual slaves on these plantations. Because once the plantations were there, the little farmers couldn't compete, and they ended up basically virtually enslaved themselves. And that's in the film. You need to know that because you can't, as the great grandson of one of Governor Kemp's enslaved Africans said to me, if you suppress history, you suppress the vote. And that's what's happening in Georgia and Florida and Texas and all these states with these anti-divisive language laws. So don't say anything divisive now, Steve.
Right. I'll try not to. Well, Greg, we're wrapping things up here, and we certainly appreciate your spending time. I know you've been on other media outlets as well, and we appreciate you here at WSLR and WBPV here in Sarasota and Bradenton, Florida. So just remind people just here on the way out if they want to get more information or if they want to see the film itself.
To get more information, see the film itself, just go to gregpalast.com, GREGPALAST, and you get all those links to check your registration to know what to do if you do get if they try to not give you a ballot. And more, and just as important, I want everyone to get that link out to send people to gregpalast.com or to saveyourvote.org and save your vote. Save our nation. It's not whether you're for or against Trump or Harris. It's not about left or right. It's about right and wrong. And it's a real movie, so bring your popcorn. It is very entertaining. Some of it's very funny, and some of it, if you cry at some point, if you don't laugh at one point and cry at the other, I will pay for your therapy. How about that for an offer?
That's the greatest offer there. All right, well, this has been Steve Norris reporting for WSLR and WPPV about Greg Palast and his new movie, Vigilantes Incorporated, America's new vote suppression hitman, narrated by Rosario Dawson and produced by Martin Sheen. And thank you, Greg. Have a good day.
Thanks, Steve.
Teachers and union members warn about the 2025 plan for public schools. At the Orange County Classroom Teachers Association Union Hall, University of Central Florida professor Dr. Robert Casanello and other local educators slammed parts of Project 2025 that could decimate the public education system as we know it and undercut the labor unions that fight to preserve it. Trump's extreme Project 2025 has been a blueprint of getting rid of the Department of Education if he's reelected. Casanello, who teaches history at USF and sits as a vice chair in the statewide United Faculty of Florida Labor Union, pointed out, a vocal critic of the GOP's war on what they see as ideological indoctrination in higher education, and faculty like himself, Casanello painted a grim picture for what he believes would occur in a second Trump administration should the former president be victorious in the November 5th election. He would slash funding for our K-12 schools, Castellano predicted, all the while giving massive tax cuts to billionaires and big corporations. Project 2025, a manifesto published by the right-wing Heritage Foundation, is a 922-page policy playbook developed for the next Republican administration that reaches the White House. Based on outcomes of this November's election, that could be an administration led by former president and billionaire Donald Trump. The Project 2025 playbook had been highlighted by Democratic presidential candidate Vice President Kamala Harris on the campaign trail as a preview of what Americans could expect if Trump is reelected to the White House. Florida's been a testing ground for Project 2025 ideas, said Ron Pollard, president of the Orange Education Support Professionals Association, a labor union that represents thousands of non-instructional staff in schools, from custodial workers to bus drivers, cafeteria workers, and paraprofessionals. I want everyone who's listening today to hear this when we say we will never stop fighting against those who think our children's education and safety is just a means to an end. Mara Rivera, a local teacher and vice president of the Orange County Classroom Teachers Association, agreed. She noted several pillars of Harris's platform that directly touch on issues important to many parents, students, and teachers, including access to affordable child care, advancing the Biden administration efforts on student debt relief, and investing in financial aid to help make higher education more affordable for families with fewer means. And I don't need to remind anyone that Governor Tim Walz is a teacher and a coach. He knows firsthand what our educators are facing, or that Vice President Harris is a staunch supporter of unions and their right to collectively bargain, Rivera said. As a result of the controversial law SB 256 approved by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis last year, more than 68,000 public employees in Florida have lost their union representation and thus the protections and benefits they received under their union contracts. Some of those unions were first established decades ago, but due to stringent new mandates for unions, have been decertified. Several groups affiliated with Project 2025 contributors or that otherwise sit on advisory boards directly lobbied or otherwise proudly advocated for that Florida legislation, including lobbying arms for the Florida-based Foundation for Government Accountability, the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, and the out-of-state James Madison Institute. The bill was also a priority for the Florida chapter for Americans for Prosperity, a Koch-affiliated think tank that seeks to defund the public education system and drain it of its resources. Hungarians are not as pleased with this strongman leader as our former president. Thousands of people protested outside the headquarters of Hungary's public media corporation over the weekend to denounce state-controlled media for being a propaganda factory for the government of nationalist Prime Minister Viktor Orban at taxpayers' expense, the Associated Press reported. The opposition-led demonstrations demanded the dismantling of the state-controlled media firm and the public media director be fired. Protest organizer and opposition figure Peter Magyar criticized the government-run media for its lies and propaganda, calling it a global scandal. Demonstrators also called for restoration of genuine public media, legal prohibitions on government propaganda, and the resignation of news directors accused of falsifying information. Since taking office in 2010, Orban has increasingly cracked down on media freedoms in Hungary. Critics at home and abroad have complained that the ruling Fidesz party has used media buyouts by government-connected business magnates to build a pro-government media empire. According to Reporters Without Borders, Orban's party controls about 80% of Hungary's media market resources. The international group also put the Hungarian leader on its list of media predators, the first European Union leader to earn that label. The long-serving prime minister and his administration have also come under EU scrutiny over alleged attacks on the rule of law and accusations of corruption, Radio Free Europe noted. Observers said the demonstrations also highlighted the increasing prominence of Magyar and his fledgling Tisza party